Tech of Sports, episode 90. Writer and lifestyle editor John Scott Lewinsky. Tonight on the Tech of Sports, John Scott Lewinsky. Netcast Studio apps are a great way to receive our content on your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. Download the Netcast Studio app. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. The Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio. And you can check out Netcast Studio. com. Every Wednesday, we bring you the Tech of Sports. A quick note, Bluehost Web Hosting is a current partner here at the network, and they are a hosting affiliate program. You can use the special link, netcaststudio.com/Bluehost special, to learn more about what Bluehost Web Hosting has to offer. Just excited to have my buddy John Scott Lewinsky on here tonight. Writer of everything involving technology, sports, automobiles, and basically, John, do you kind of say it's everything that guys like? Is that kind of what you cover?
Basically, yeah. If it's a guy's topic, I'll take it on. That's pretty much the issue. And then where ladies come in usually is gift guides or relationship dating pieces, stuff like that. But yes, I'm pretty wide open on that topic.
Yeah, I know you are. And I'd say you might be the one guy around that probably maybe stretches even what you cover a little more than I do. I'm pretty widespread. You might even be a little more widespread. I know what you mean about the women's products. I just had to do a couple gift guides here for some products, really nice products, the women's skin cleansers, electronic and high tech skin cleansers. The women's, we don't have that for guys. We just kind of put on John shave and put on whatever we want to put on and kind of head out. Women really have a bunch of products and a bunch of technology that they have to invest in and use to get out the door, I guess, each day.
With so many gift guides out there that writers are doing, journalists are doing, print or online, there's no excuse for guys anymore. We say they can't come up with a gift for anybody.
Oh, I know.
Endless. This time of year, I'm sure we've discussed this before. This time of year, one of the things we spend most of our time doing between now and, say, early mid-December, you're just doing countless gift guides on different topics. I'm doing men's fashion now. I'm probably going to start working on gifts for motorcycle riders tomorrow. It's out there. All you have to do is open up your browser and look for it.
Yeah, remember the day when people used to say he's hard to buy for? You don't hear that as much anymore because there's so many different things out there. There's usually something that you can pinpoint for a particular person when you're looking to buy a gift.
Yeah, for men, you have to determine what their interests are, how into being men they are, etc. Those are the categories that I usually chase down.
And your pieces are short and really to the point. You kind of you kind of give a good summary of a product without too much fluff, and then you're on to the next one. It kind of gives the readers a chance to eyeball your paragraphs and kind of pick out the main advantages or disadvantages or the main features of a particular product. Is that kind of how you your theory behind how you do it
for gift guides? Yes, because I think we have to admit that a lot of the readers out there now only skim their, whether it's competition for time, a million pages they want to look at in an hour, whatever it is, they do tend to skim. What I tend to do for gift guides is, just like you said, keep it short and to the point. But if for individual cars, more advanced items, motorcycles, travel destinations, I'll do longer pieces, more detailed pieces. The trick I try to do is I don't like to trash things. My attitude is it's good for somebody, and I try to look into it and suggest who it's right for, who would like it, and then who would not, and that way you've got a more fair overview of a product, especially with cars, because there are very few bad cars anymore where you really right. could write a horrible negative trashing article about an automobile. I've done it for a couple that I really didn't like, but the fact is cars are so common now and becoming so commonly, good technologically and mechanically, that you end up just determining what a car is good for. Who is it good for? And you leave the review at that. At least that's what I try to do.
Yeah, we're going to cover a wide range of topics here tonight. As the listeners can already hear, we're already just kind of talking about whatever's on our mind. And John is based in Milwaukee, and I get to see him on some of the fam trips that we're on. So it's, you know, it's good on those trips, John, kind of to hang out with some people who are semi like-minded, I guess, or kind of understand what we do, because probably the general public really doesn't see that. They may see the end result, the article we write or the review, but they don't know what goes into it. And let's you just came off a new cruise ship. Can you talk about that at all and how that went?
Yeah, it was a very short, less than 3 days, 2.5 day cruise out of Newark, out of the Hudson River, out of the bay, out to sea, and then down, I would estimate, off the coast of Virginia and back again. But it was not so much about where you're going, but about the ship itself. And it's the newest cruise ship that Royal Caribbean built. It's in service now. I think it's on one of its first paid cruises after being on a bunch of media, a cruise for the media, a cruise for travel agents, a cruise for people who work for Royal Caribbean. So this is one of its first paid cruises now. But it's more than 1,000 feet long. If I remember correctly, it's 20 plus decks high. It's 67,000 tons and can put out more than 83,000 horsepower. It's a floating city for all intents and purposes. And what they're really hyping on this is the technology of the ship, from environmental factors to every other element of the ship. It's technologically rich. For example, computers on board could do the entire voyage from dock to destination and back again. They do once you get to shallow water, and once you get into areas where there's traffic, they hand the ship over to the captain to maneuver it in. But the computers run everything else. It has this is more of a gimmick, I think, but they do have robot bartenders on the ship where you simply punch in, essentially on an iPad, what drink you'd like, what rail drink you'd like, and a robotic arm mixes it and drops it off on the bar for you when you're done. It's something, I think if people look that up on YouTube, they'll be able to find it, but it's something to watch. I mean, I don't know how practical it is, but it's just, you know, it's just a demonstration of the technology. The most impressive thing about this is not a single piece of waste or anything. With the exception of human beings and souvenirs, nothing comes off that boat once it's on. In other words, all solid waste is either sorted for recycling, repurposing, or it's burned on onboard incinerators, organic waste. And even the organic waste that's burned, the smoke is scrubbed before it leaves the ship, and the ash is collected and turned over to concrete makers for road material.
Oh, jeez. They've put some thought into this.
Yeah, nothing comes off. The gray water, you know, the wastewater on the ship can be purified on board back into drinking water if need be. They can clean it that significantly. So it's an amazing thing to watch that every piece of waste is turned into something else somehow.
So on a cruise like this, are they working out the kinks, or are they putting on a show for the media to write about, or a little of both?
They've worked out the kinks at this point. This was the show off to the press. And, you know, like I say, people, I'm sure a lot of the, you know, travel writers are more excited about the fact that you can skydive in a simulated, you know, wind tunnel, or you can surf off the back of the ship or whatever. I was less interested in every cruise ship has stuff like that on it. Every cruise ship has entertainment and activities. I was more interested in the technology of the thing, that a thing that big, that 4,000 people can be on board that ship and produce zero waste material.
Can you feel the ship moving in the current at all?
You can, and that was surprising to me, because that thing is massive. These are amongst some of the largest ships on the planet, and it shows you the power of the ocean. That if you hit the right, you know, the right elements, that ship rocks and rolls like everything else, even at that size.
Any high tech golf simulators on the ship?
You know, I looked for that, and that's one of the things I didn't see. I'm wondering if the days of golf, the days of people used to shoot trap off the back of ships. I don't think that's happening anymore. That's it. I think that those kind of things they could add. I mean, look, if they have full on basketball courts, three swimming pools, bump-em cars on board, rock climbing, everything else, who knows what they might add? There's enough room on board.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, good recap on the ship. Is that the Phantom of the Seas? Is that what it's called?
The Quantum of Yep.
Yeah, I've been seeing some commercials for it down here in Atlanta already. So before that, you were with me at Royal Isabella in Puerto Rico. Kind of give a couple paragraph or so summation what you thought of that.
Yeah, it's spectacular resort. Very quiet, very peaceful. I think it was originally planned out as a private homes estate. And then the people behind it decided they wanted to open it up to the public and make it a public resort property. You're essentially, you're sort of on the edge of a rainforest, but yet you're very close to the beach. The facilities are gorgeous, but also very private. You can be in your villa, and if you don't want to, you can leave, you can just let the outside world, you know, pound sand. And the golf course, you played it as well. The golf course is gorgeous, but as I said to you, I don't think it's a traditional resort course. It's difficult. You have to play it effectively. I think you need to have played it a couple times at least.
Yeah.
To get an idea of the lines, the targets, a lot of blind tee shots, a lot of very thick vegetation to miss. It's still. I would say casual golfers at this place who want to go out and do a round had better keep themselves calm and just enjoy the experience, because they're going to lose some golf balls.
Yeah, and play the up tees and at least have a chance to get around on some of the holes that are pretty difficult. There's some blind shots and some trees that are in the way, even on some tee boxes. They're really, like you mentioned about the ship, they're really big on eco-friendly and conservation and sustainability down there as well. So that's a big trend. I know, you know, in travel and I think that they, like you said, that place is really exclusive. It's a luxury resort right now with plans to build a hotel and open it up to more people. I'd like to see how that place operates when there's more people there. That's going to be the trick, I think.
Yeah. We were spoiled by a very small group. Yeah.
You can't get many people there with just 20 casitas or villas. I mean, you're only going to have a finite number of people, and then like the general public's not going to really wander onto there, even though the golf course is open to the public.
Right, and the thing is, I haven't seen how heavily they advertise either to get those villas full. So that's going to be interesting to see how they evolve. There's also talk of them adding more golf. Yeah. I think they're talking three courses at least right now. That's the last I heard. And that's going to make it much. We caught it at a nice time where it was very quiet and we had a nice chance to review it. And then we can sort of, you know, let people know what's coming when it's all grown up.
It's far from being grown up, even though that land has been there for a long time. And yeah, it was a fun trip, and it's kind of a jewel there. It's a growing part of Puerto Rico, and I'm glad we got to see it kind of in its infancy. You go back there, you know, years from now, it's not going to look like that, I don't think.
No, and you're going to have a lot more people on the links. You're going to have a lot more people in the restaurants, which is fine. We want, you know, let them make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah, that's the only way they're going to grow and survive. And that's their goal. And we're with John Scott Lewinsky here. Great to have him on. And John, before that, you were in Europe for the NFL in London there. And I think you kind of come to the determination that eventually there's going to be one or more NFL teams based in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's not a scoop that I'm coming up with myself, but
it's your scoop, John. We'll give it to you.
That was sort of, I mean, I have been in the story pretty deep, and I've been talking to people there and trying to get into City Hall and get a feel for it and everything else. I think a lot of people are still denying it, and sort of a lot of people here don't believe it's going to happen. I think a lot of people in London don't think it's going to happen. I think they're all wrong. I think it's inevitable. When you see what a game day there looks like, when you see the suits in the press box talking about, you know, the same buzzwords I was overhearing were youth involvement, and, you know, they're looking to the future. They're definitely trying. The corporate presence is already there. There are tons of questions, but I think the central question of whether or not a team is going to set up shop permanently in London is inevitable. It's already decided. An average game day there is more of a celebration of American football than it is about any particular team. I took in Jacksonville, Dallas, and yes, there were fans for each team there, but they were a small contingent compared to the overall just American football fans. You'll see every jersey. You know, I saw guys mixing and matching. I saw a guy with, you know, a Cincinnati jersey and a San Francisco hat. You know, it's everybody. It's either the Brits who just happen to like American football or the scores of American expats who live in London. It's a chance for them all to come together and just watch an American football game in person. The question will be, does that hold up if they put a team there full time?
I got two questions. One, are they acting like Americans when we go to a football game? Are they embracing the American traditions, or are they using their own British traditions and interjecting that into American football? What's your opinion on that?
Some of the fans will still do some English soccer gimmicks a little bit. The on-field experience is entirely American. Jacksonville is technically the home team.
Right.
And there's constant rumors that that's the team they want to export. They want to get Jacksonville out of Florida and get them down or get them over to London. If it's not an expansion team, that's the team that's most rumored to be heading over. So their cheerleaders are there. Their drum corps is there. All of the gimmicks of a Jacksonville home game are on the field there. So it's the same vibe that way. One of the major differences is the NFL's really trying to pound home an American-England partnership. There's both national anthems. There's both flags on the field. It's the players have to run out in the field with flags. It's both the Union flag and the American flag. So there's a constant. It's partly marketing, but it's also the idea of we're not coming here to invade Wembley Stadium. We're coming here as a partnership.
And I guess the other question is, how knowledgeable are your rank and file British or European American football fans? How knowledgeable are they about the players, about the game, about the traditions, about, you know, what the game means, or, you know, playoff implications or division? Are they talking about that stuff, or are they just there to watch big hits and long kicks and Hail Mary passes?
It's getting better. I think when the NFL first started going over there, you know, the jokes were the British fans would watch and wonder why they have to bring on a guy just to kick when in every sport they know every player on the pitch can kick. It wasn't registering the fact that, you know, even their biggest, toughest rugby players would be small on an NFL field. They're slowly grasping how, you know, what freaks these athletes are for the NFL. That's coming along. Also, there is programming as part of the NFL coverage in London. There is additional programming during the games, before and after the games, that explain to British fans who they're looking at, both as teams and players and current trends and who's playing well and who isn't and who the stars are. And whereas in the U.S. during timeouts, they go to commercials, obviously. In the U.K., they go to analysts, and analysts will talk you through what's just happened and what could happen next through every timeout. So there are most of the NFL broadcasts on British TV have no commercials in them. When there's a break in play, they use it for educational purposes.
What about in the week or two leading up to the game? Are they really promoting it from an educational point of view? You know, this is Tony Romo. He's the quarterback of the Cowboys, and, you know, Jacksonville is a young team. Are they going through kind of a little bit about educating the people a little about these teams and some of the players on them? So once the game starts or once they get into town, they kind of know who these guys are.
There's a lot of that. Yeah. London also, they create partnerships where the city hypes the NFL coming in general. There's a, anyone who visits London knows Regent Street and Oxford Street and those massive long central London shopping areas, probably their central London headquarters for just shopping in general. Those streets are lined with banners for the NFL. And if there's a hype event or a pep rally or some sort of pro NFL event that'll happen in those areas to get as much walk up traffic as they can to sort of hype the fact that the NFL's there. None of that's happening if all they want to do is have three games there to draw some.
Right.
This is to make London permanently aware that the NFL exists. And there's resistance. There's resistance here and there. I don't think it's going to matter. I think they're still going to, I think it's still going to be full speed ahead. They just have a lot to work through. They have to work through. The Players Association is going to have to wrestle with this quite a bit. I mean, are players going to have to live there full time? Will they live there part time? Will the NFL provide housing for them? Or do they have to find their own? Are they paid in pounds sterling or are they paid in U.S. money with exchange rate figured in? This is stuff they're going to have to work out. The players already said they don't want to live there. Jacksonville has said they don't want to transfer there. Coach of the UK national soccer team is upset that the NFL tears up the turf at Wembley. There's things to work out, but I don't think that's going to stop anything. I think we're still going to see it.
Somebody wants it to happen. It's going to happen, and the NFL knows how to market. So that ball's in their court. And you know, for whatever you think about the NFL and how they operate, that's definitely in their plan. So with John Scott Lewinsky here, let's take a quick break. Amazon, here's a partner on the show. You can do any of your shopping this holiday season on Amazon by using our affiliate link here at the studio. It's netcaststudio.com/Amazon. You can buy anything on Amazon through that link. There's no extra cost to you, and it helps support Netcast Studio and all the good programming that they bring, including the Tech of Sports and the Tech Show, Waves of Tech, and Conversation Corner and Busy Ladies. It goes on and on. So great content from Netcast Studio, and you can help support what they're doing and what they're passionate about at netcaststudio.com/Amazon. Go buy something this holiday season through the studio network. So back with John Scott Lewinsky. And John, I know when we get together, we always we have some laughs because, you know, I think we got pretty good gigs, and the general person doesn't maybe understand what we do. Like I said, they see an article written and they don't realize, you know, kind of what goes into it or how we get to that point. And it's, you know, it's fun. I guess we enjoy it in many different ways, but do people actually realize how tough it is? All the work we have to do to get that article out a lot of times.
I think what people don't realize is the amount you have to, because the hard truth about these kind of careers are the perks are amazing. The money is not. I think anybody out there who wants to get into journalism of any kind has to brace themselves for the fact that, you know, it's never been the kind of career you're going to get if big a bank account is your primary motivation. If it's life experience, and if first of all, you have to love, obviously, you know, if you love to write, but also if you just want to experience a lot of amazing things, this is a great way to do it and get paid to do it. I think people have to realize, people will say it's, you know, it's amazing you get the travel and everything else. I think it takes a certain type of personality to be able to handle the travel. I know people who go away for a weekend or a week's vacation or wherever else, but the travel wipes them out for another week. That's not going to happen. I mean, I, for example, was on the road from October 23rd to yesterday, stopping home for a total of 2.5 days in that span in two little stops. And you have to be able to handle that. You have to be able to deal with that. The people you know have to be able to deal with that. It's also an odd thing where I end up having friends everywhere that I will lose track of for a month or two at a time and then realize I got to get back in touch with that person. That could be LA, New York, Vegas, down, you know, obviously, you know, down your way, the UK, tons of friends in England that I have to keep in touch with. And it's another perk, but it's also a challenge. So people, yeah, and people are amazed by the stuff we get.
Pretty unreal some of the time. How many golf shirts have you been given this year?
Oh, good grief. I got a drawer full of them. And here's the thing. Every time I say this, I'm grateful for the work, touch wood, you know, right away. You never want to go, oh, it's such a burden to get so much swag. I immediately try to express gratitude.
Yeah.
And also just acknowledge the fact that it's all work and I'm grateful to have it. So nobody thinks, because the first way to get people to really hate you is to complain about, get jaded and then complain about amazing things. And I meet people like this.
Yeah, there's guys on the trips that, or people on the trips that do complain.
Right. And those people, I get thank them in advance for saving me having to talk to them, because I want nothing to do with them at that point already. It's just the idea, like you say, people, I have right now a Mazda MX-5 in my driveway. I don't own it. It's been given to me for a week. I test it. I write it up. I give it back. After that, I get something from Toyota. Then after that, I got something coming from Chevy. And that's, you know, then in the summertime, it's motorcycles. I know you carry three cell phones at once because you're testing multiple manufacturers and services and everything else at the same time. And when you're getting cars and cell phones for free, you better not be complaining about anything, period.
No. No, or just little things sometimes are kind of neat, and that's you know, little gestures. But I've seen people on these trips complain that, you know, the wrong flavor vanilla ice cream was served to them, or, you know, something totally, you know, outrageous. So yeah, you gotta realize, look, big picture, you know, what we're doing isn't rocket science, but there's a method to, you know, them trying to attract our attention or trying to show us the best. They're not going to invite us somewhere and show us the worst of the city or the worst of the resort. So you know, we know going there, it's been planned out a little bit. We're going to see this and this, and usually it works out for them. Sometimes it doesn't. You may get a stinker. I was on a trip where we had a total stinker of a lunch one time, and the guy was an idiot. And so I chose not to write about that particular, mention that particular restaurant and lunch on a particular trip. So it's, you're not gaming the system. You're just kind of doing, you're free to do what you feel is right and what you want to do. So it's fun. And you know, it's a lot of work. I'm also, you know, my regular work doesn't stop. My writing doesn't stop when I'm on a trip. So I'm, you know, working sometimes until midnight, putting out, you know, articles for the rest of the week. It's long. I worked 18-hour days, a couple of days there in Puerto Rico. I know nobody, right. I know nobody's feeling sorry for me, but
from your private villa. Yeah.
with my plunge, you know, taking a break in the plunge pool.
Right. And you just have to realize, you know, you don't want to take anything for granted, because there are people who are, you know, there are working men and women out there who have jobs that are a lot tougher on than what we do. We just have to, you know, pace it, log a lot of miles, feed a lot of outlets. On the UK trip, there were long days of covering events. And then, you know, I was only getting maybe 4 hours of sleep a night, because you say you have to file stories back to the US. Sometimes the time differences means it's prime time to get your articles in right now. So you're not going to be getting much rest. And, you know, so what? It's,
there's tricks to the trade we know about. I've had articles written, you know, ahead of time and then just filled in the gaps, and people wonder how you can file that so fast. So there's ways around making deadlines, and you know that too.
And the interesting thing too is people assume if you get things, you're being bribed into. And the fact is, I've found, whether it's a bad review of a car or whatever it might be, where maybe it's not, you know, vicious review, but at the same time, it's predominantly not positive. As long as I write something that's not obviously nasty, sarcastic, trying to mock a product or an event or a location to make me look clever, as long as I'm not doing that, the PR people, the press people, the company, whatever it is, will accept, you know, they're not going to be thrilled about it, but they're not going to bury you for it.
That's we have a lot of freedom. So that's part of it. As we wrap up, John, what do you have coming up the rest of the year?
I have to reconstruct some sort of a life here at home for a week or so. Just do the basic stuff of dry cleaning, bills to pay, actually talk to other human beings who live in proximity to me for a change, that kind of thing. I have to head out for a day or two to the LA Auto Show to look at some of the things rolling out there. That's in a day or two, but that's just a quick trip. That's back and forth. And then nothing until early December. I think I'm going to Mexico just to try on a new golf course that Jack Nicklaus designed. And that's my next thing. Things usually slow down around now, Thanksgiving through December. Things will be a little slower. And then the insanity of the Consumer Electronics Show starts it all over again for a new year.
Yep. And then the golf show.
The golf show is fun. I'm not as huge a fan of CES because it's just too massively insane. Yeah.
How can listeners follow what you're doing, John? How can they follow you on social media? Let people know how they can see what you're doing.
My Twitter is my first and last name, one word, John Lewinsky, JohnLewinski. Easy to find that. My website is lewinskiwrites.com. So LewinskiWrites.com, and pretty much just Google my full name, John Scott Lewinsky, and my stuff usually will pop up. And I answer emails. If anybody wants to get a hold of me, I can always answer emails, or I answer Twitter messages too if anybody has any questions.
Yeah, we couldn't make it if we didn't answer emails. That's an important part of our job too, John.
Right. And the fact is, it's good to know people are reading, even if I've received everything from being called an idiot to an out. I got one outright death threat off something I wrote, and my attitude is always to respond positive, saying, just keep reading. Thank you.
John, I always ask my guest one last question. What's the one gadget that you can't live without right now?
Yeah, I know you're going to ask that question too. I want to come up with an actual gadget that I really enjoy having. You know what I'm using right now for the first time is, you may have seen this too, it's the Misfit Shine. It's just another activity monitor, but it's so tiny you can wear it and not even realize it's on. You basically wear it around your neck, and you can clip it onto any, you know, you can have a St. Christopher's medal or dog tags. It doesn't care. It just clips on there, and it keeps track of how active or inactive you are for a day. And other than that, my favorite thing I've got is the silliest thing. The silly in a fun, positive way, as opposed to, you know, a foolish way. There's the company Jawbone makes everything from activity monitors to Bluetooth earpieces for the phone and everything else. They've made an activity monitor that wraps around your wrist to keep track of your exercise. It's flexible, and it just sort of folds around your wrist. But they partner with a company called Brilliance to sort of bling it up. And I've got it in the other room, and it's basically an activity monitor with sterling silver and 30 diamonds on it. And I have no idea what it's for. I have no idea what to do with the thing. And it's one of those things, there's no reason for it to really have 30 diamonds on it. But if you're going to go ahead and do it, why not pack it in?
Yeah. If there's something about you, John, I would think the word bling.
Yeah. I've got the thing, and I have no idea what to do with it, because I'm the last person in the world who's, you know, if I'm in a peacock, it's going to be a pocket square, not 30 diamonds on my wrist.
John, thanks for coming on. And I'll tell all the listeners to follow you on social media and Google for your articles, because you're a good follow.
All right. Thank you, Rick. I'll catch up with you somewhere out there.
Yep. We'll talk to you soon, John. Keep up the good work. You've been listening to The Tech of Sports, a Netcast Studio production.